Chapter 21, Calendar, 1940. From Calendar, signs again appeared that something was amiss with Emily, one of the Dion quintuplets. The girls were turning 7, and Life magazine ran a huge spread updating the world on their latest developments. The cover featured all 5 of them, lined up along stairs, each veil-covered girl holding a tiny Bible and rosary beads in their hand. They had participated in their first communion, an event for which the Roman Catholic Church now considered them capable of reason and knowing right from wrong. The article mentioned that because they were the result of a multiple birth pregnancy, they had developed an idiosyncratic form of communication with each other, and that they spoke with, quote, limited vocabularies in their native French-Canadian patois, end quote. Although they were 7, they had left the confines of the Defoe nursery just once in their life to attend a reception for them hosted by Queen Elizabeth and King George. Other than that, their daily lives were a regimented schedule of feedings, school, and playtimes in front of the thousands of visitors that still made daily trips to witness them firsthand. For Dr. Defoe and the nurses that took care of them, they presented a unique medical problem. Isolated from the rest of the world, they had come across few of the illnesses typical for children of that age. Because of their intimate setting and constant togetherness, if one of the girls came down with something, they would likely all suffer the same infection. In the Life magazine article, Marie is pictured being examined by an optometrist, the caption reading, "Her left eye showed improvement, her weaker right eye none. She will need glasses." In a stark indicator as to the voyeuristic lens through which they were observed, the magazine stated, quote, "The Quins during the last 2 years have grown somewhat less pretty, with broad cheekbones that indicate their sturdy French peasant heredity," end quote. Portraits of each girl followed, with specific descriptions of their personality, weight, and physical attractiveness. The difficulties of Emily, quote, considered the plainest-looking Quinn, end quote, stood out in another sequence of photographs. The girls were in their schoolroom, participating in a writing lesson, outfitted in identical gingham dresses. Even their hair, styled with curly ponytails and white bows, were the same. The overall effect that had originally captured the world's interest was stunning. At age 7, the girls were still nearly indistinguishable from one another, except for one thing. Every girl held a pencil in their right hand, face pressed toward their paper in concentration. Every girl, except Emily. She wrote with her left, a deviation from their near-perfect uniformity. By itself, writing left-handed would be of little consequence, but the photographer had captured close-ups of their writing in order that the reader might glean a clearer picture of each girl's personality. They had written several school-related words in French, livre, or book, classe, or class, cahier, or chalk. Towards the end of the list, they had first written their teacher's name, Marielle. No one would expect much from the penmanship of any 7-year-old, but Emily's writing was much different than the others. It was clear she could not write as well as her sisters. She was unable to coordinate an S or other trickier letters from her hand, and the malformed words were packed together in half the space they should have occupied. At the end of the exercise, the girls had written their own name, a time-honored tradition any school child might perform multiple times a day. Marie Dion and Cecile Dion wrote out their first and last names. Yvonne and Annette dropped Dion. Emily's paper simply read E, but stopped there. This wasn't a nickname of hers. She'd either become distracted with something or had run out of time.